How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Darren O'Reilly, the founder of WholeSup. We talk about his transition from athlete to founder. Here's my chat with Darren.
Darren, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much for having me on. Delighted to be here. As you know, I'm a big fan.
And you did the thing I love. You brought in a sample so we can actually look at the product, feel it, enjoy it.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's something we're really proud of. So happy to share it with you.
It's cool branding. I really like it. I was chatting to you about outside about it. I just love, it's very clean.
Yeah, that's one of the things we really wanted to come across, because I think what we were saying earlier on, the nutrition space can be quite intimidating because there's so many options, a lot of mistruths, all everything like that. So we wanted our brand to be open, inviting, clean, not muscular, not scientific, even though we're backed by science, but we wanted people to feel comfortable looking, feeling the brand, inviting them in.
Yeah, because like people are more savvy than I think brands give them credit for.
Way more savvy. It's interesting. We do a lot of sampling, and part of that sampling is obviously first people want to taste the product, make sure that they like it before they buy it a lot of the time. But then also the first thing they do is they flip over the back of the pack, read it, and then come with intelligent questions.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
The consumer is way more educated than ever before. And it's one of the things that we notice, like when we do kind of a hot jar on our website, one of the main places that people spend a lot of time is actually on the ingredients section. So within our ingredients section, we have like a lot of science papers that influence our decision to put the ingredients in there, so people can actually educate themselves a little bit further on it. But it is, consumers are being fed with so much information. It's good and bad, but thankfully we're trying to educate them as well. But
even when you're a bit savvy, like you still, it can be complex, it can be confusing. I consider myself fairly savvy and I'd be pretty picky about what I put in my body. But even sometimes you're kind of going, I'm not sure.
100%. And I work in the space and I still feel that way, from labeling to
food, especially
food labeling in particular. In the nutrition space, a label can be 20% in or out. So
what does that mean?
So if you're putting in, just say, a protein amount, we have 31 grams of protein in our serving. That could be 20% in or out.
Oh.
So what we've done is we've gone third party tested our product so that what we say is in our product is actually in it.
Okay.
So the third party testing, we're part of the informed testing program. And that means that it has to be exactly what we say it is. And then also it needs to be clean. So if, for example, if an athlete takes it, that they can be drug tested and everything like that. But I think from my own background, I wanted that to be the baseline of all our products. So every single product is third party tested.
Isn't it mad that it isn't?
It's crazy.
Like when you kind of like look at some foods, you're kind of going, I'm putting this in my body. I'm eating, and somebody's eating it every day. And you're kind of going, do you know what's in that? And they're like, no.
No.
And sometimes you don't. I can't believe that 20% in or out. That's a big swing.
It's a massive swing. And it's the same when, if you notice, calories on menus in restaurants as well. There's a margin of error there as well.
I wish that was everywhere, by the way. I still can't believe that that's not everywhere, because it does inform choices.
It's frightening. It can be quite scary seeing that as well on a menu.
Because, like, the majority of people, you can't tell, like, oh, that's, 600 calories, that's 1500, and sometimes you say, that's 2000 calories for a meal, and you're kind of going, oh, that's near your daily allowance
for
dinner.
And it does, it definitely helps people make an educated decision.
I just can't understand why it's not the board.
Some people are wired in that way that they'll make that decision, then other people will just not ignore it. But having the choice of it being there is
exactly
the option.
Well, then you can make, we talked about this earlier, you can make more healthy decisions throughout the day. Then it's like the Whoop, it's nudges, it's kind of going, it's empowering, right? That's what I think comes down to empowering.
100%. The Whoop is funny. We were chatting about that earlier. Like, it's incredible. Like, the more data, we're a data-driven business. So the more data you can have personally or as a business, the better.
Especially now when it's so accessible. If you said to me or you like 15 years ago, oh, there's going to be this device you wear on your wrist and it'll tell you all your health data every day, you'd be like, oh my God, we're living in the future. Yeah. Like you would think like, oh, I'm a high level athlete now. Like that's the dream.
Yeah. And it's only going to get more powerful. Like there's going to be so much more. I'm sure what edition the Whoop is on now. It's probably four or five.
Four,
imagine it in 5 or 10 years time, what it's going to be able to do. I know when I was wearing my one, I was saying to you outside, it was, I got sick before I got sick. My HRV was down. All the indicators were there. And then the next time I got sick, the exact same trend. I knew it was coming. So I cancelled what I had planned to do that day and just tried to get better quicker.
But it's amazing. And it gets smarter.
Yeah.
And I think it's, like you said, it's only going to get smarter. The more, and the more it talks to other things that you might be wearing or the other things you might be ingesting and doing. It's huge. Like, that's why the health and nutrition space is just so interesting. Like, how did you get into this?
Yeah, so my background was a professional athlete for about 7 years. I went through Leinster, then went over to Harlequins when Conor O'Shea took over there, which was brilliant, and then played a little bit in the English Championship and then came back here. And then, unfortunately, through ability and probably injury, I had to start looking at other careers. Then started working in digital transformation, which was brilliant. Really enjoyed that. So what I was doing there was helping businesses go international, acquire new customers in new markets. But in that kind of transition, I started realizing how much I was missing the support of some of the best dietitians and nutritionists we had, and started making really poor food choices, leading me to lose 20 kgs in weight, which is an awful lot of weight, in a fairly short period of time. Trust me, it wasn't on purpose.
Poor choices. That sounds epic.
Yeah, I know. I actually quite enjoyed being kind of a chunky monkey or a bigger lad, but it was just from having a coffee run into the office or trying to maximize my lunch hour, which sometimes is easily done when you're either trying to get a workout in or enjoy a walk. And then I just picked up what everybody does. And I'm not judging anybody, but this is what we all had, or what I was doing was having a meal deal, which is cheap, convenient, but nutritionally disastrous.
Yeah.
And that was where the penny was like, okay, I'm surrounded with very like-minded people who are driven, like in the job, we are in a very kind of high-performing team. And everybody thought they're living a very healthy lifestyle, but it was really, we're all having very similar behavioral patterns.
Over the past 5 years on this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish business who grew from one idea to become world-class companies able to compete with the very best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to becoming more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. And if there's one thing that entrepreneurs want, aside from more money, it's more time. The local enterprise offices want to give that back. Their supports for competitiveness and productivity can help your business save time, money, and energy. For them, it's all in a day's work. So if you want to give your business the gift of time, decreased costs, and lower electricity bills, then go to allinadayswork.ie, take 2 minutes to fill out the form, and let your local enterprise office handle the rest. If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy.
It's an interesting how you'll... I was the only thing with this morning on the way in here. Like, you become the sum of the people you're around consistently. I'm a big believer in that. I think it's Tim Ferriss is the sum of the five people you surround yourself most often. I 100% believe that. But even broader, who you surround yourself in the day-to-day, that becomes part of your identity subconsciously. And then you start making those choices because we talked about this having a coffee. Like, we're herd animals. Yeah. We will replicate what the herd is doing for good or for bad.
Yeah. And that was where the aha moment came along. And I was like, okay, right, what's in the market? I've seen the emergence of some quite big players. And one, I didn't like the taste of their products. And then two, it didn't make me feel great. So from a stomach satiation point of view, and then an energy point of view. And that's when I reached out to Dr. Brian Carson, who's now my co-founder, who thankfully was a lot more educated than I was in the space. And that's when we set out to kind of simplify complex nutrition. But then he had a kind of remit, a blank sheet of paper to solve this problem. We have some basic parameters around trying to have 400 calories in there, because if you're working off 2,000 calories a day, that kind of works into a complete meal. But then we also wanted to have high protein, so 31 grams of protein, 30 vitamins and minerals at an absorbable level. A lot of people take all their vitamins and minerals in one dose, and they don't get the actual effects from it.
Okay.
And then we also wanted to have some novel ingredients in there. So like organic cherries, unbelievable for inflammation. Beetroot, great for blood flow. And
I randomly love beetroot.
It is.
I don't know why I love it.
It's one of the
it.
Best superfoods out there.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, there
you
go.
If you look now at, I feel better. If you look at high performance teams, they will all be taking a shot of beetroot. A lot of them will be taking a shot of beetroot before a game because of the output that it gives you.
Really?
Yeah. And then broccoli and spinach. I won't go through all the ingredients in our product, but they're all in there for an actual purpose that will actually give your body a meaningful difference.
It's really interesting, though, because you'd come as a pro athlete. You knew.
Yeah,
you knew how to eat. Like, that's so interesting because I think like it often isn't the knowledge, it's the application. Like, you knew what a good day looks like.
Yeah.
What would an average day as a pro athlete look like for you?
Like, we were very, very fortunate. So generally you go in, you'd have breakfast. So usually it'd be a protein shake. Then you go in, do weights. Then you'd have breakfast followed by another shake. So breakfast could be porridge, poached eggs and salmon. So quite a large amount along with another shake. Then at lunch, you'd have, there could be a choice of rice, potatoes, two types of meat or fish, and then a number of greens. And then we finish off another pitch session and then probably have another shake. And then you just fend for yourself in the evening times,
okay,
which is quite funny for dinner. But like everything was methodically planned out.
Yeah.
And then if you had any questions or if you had different gains that you needed, whether that is trying to put on size, lean up, lose weight, there'd be a nutritionist to guide you through that whole process. Okay. But like the basics and the fundamentals are of trying to live a healthy lifestyle, starting with your nutrition.
Mm. It's so interesting. I'm addicted to watching like behind the scenes of sports teams.
Oh, it's addictive. It's the best. I hope you've been watching Drive to Survive.
Oh, it's amazing. Any of those sports docs I'll watch. Doesn't matter the sport, because I'm just fascinated by the behind the scenes. What does the day-to-day look like of an athlete? Because to hear that and to hear what you're talking about there, like, it's all about consistency, isn't it? Like, none of that what you talked about there is rocket science, but just the consistency day after day.
Yeah, I think consistency beats talent in life and in business. Like, one new behavior that I started doing more recently is getting up an hour earlier every day. I am definitely in a privileged position because I don't have kids at the moment, because that's something that you're able to build in. But by doing that, I get 15.3 days back in the year. And that what it's not about hustling through work straight away. It's about getting up, having a good routine. So my routine is I get up, I have a shake, I have some of my vitamins, and then I write down my tasks for the day. It's not a rush. It's a calm space. And then I go to the gym at 6:30 or whatever the time is. But that just sets me up perfectly. Mm. And that's kind of that consistency, and it just compounds over time.
It's the compounding. Exactly that. We, you know, if you get up and you're rushing, for me, that sets the tone for the whole day.
Yeah.
It just sets my mind off. My mind is quite busy in the normal best of times. Just makes the mind run faster. And then you're trying to catch up with yourself. I just hate that feeling.
Big time. And like, it's the worst feeling ever. It's just like when you're racing and you feel like you're behind, the day is very hard to get back on track. And like, I'm fortunate that I'm a fairly good sleeper. So I go to sleep at around, say, 9:45. I'd be lights out by 10:15. I'd probably read 2-3 pages of a book and I am gone, which is great.
I'm a big reader. I'll read for a long time at night. I'll read till I fall asleep. I'll read fiction. I read non-fiction during the day, fiction at night. And I'll read till I fall asleep.
Brilliant.
But like 2 pages.
I know.
Do you have to keep going back and reading the same too?
At times it feels like that.
Where were we?
Yeah.
But that, like, it is compounding. And I think kind of a slightly controversial opinion I have on this is that people use kids as an excuse. Like, I've only one. She's only 16 months. So it's still very early in the journey. But I always find it funny when people are like, oh no, I can't do that because I've got kids. I'm like, all you're doing is robbing time from the future. You're robbing them of you in the future, because unhealthy choices compound. They're like, oh, when the kids are older, okay, let's compound 10 years of bad choices.
Yeah,
you've probably shaved 15 years off your life.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of like habit stacking is a real thing. And if you kind of decide to park a a lot of your good behaviors for a continuous period of time. Nobody's perfect, but if you do it for a very long time, it's very hard to form new habits again.
Well, it becomes an identity then. Yeah. And like, look, caveat that, it's very privileged. We've only one kid. I'm able to work for myself. Like, there's a load of caveats there.
Yeah.
But at least have some sort of structure for yourself. And it's not, you have to be, it's not selfishness, but it's also just taking the power back for yourself of like, okay, I need to look after myself, because it's like the, it's the analogy of the airplane. You put your oxygen mask on first and then you do everyone else, because I think everyone else is this martyr complex of like, oh, you know, I'd love to, but you're like, okay. And I don't want to do the whole cliche, oh, but you watch Netflix and you have to unwind as well.
Yeah.
But you have to make choices, right? Everything's a choice. So I say this all the time, repeatedly. Everything is a choice. Choices you make now compound over and over and over and over again. But it is about, it's not about like fad diets or doing some rare weeks. It's what can you do consistently over years?
Yeah. And like, that's just a habit stacking. And like, it's so easy, which is part of the reason why we set up Hustle, because it's about making the correct basic habit very easy and accessible for people. So part of it is being accessibly priced, being tasting great, and actually having profound health benefits. But like, it takes 30 seconds to make a shake. So it takes away that time pressure that you may have in the morning or at lunchtime. So you're really able to look after yourself to the best of your ability.
Yeah. My backpack is stacked with snacks for today, because we've got a full day recording. Cashew nuts in there, Pink Lady apples, juice shots, shakes, jerky. Because you have to, because we talked about it earlier, if you run down to like the shop or whatever, you're kind of like looking going, what the hell am I going to get?
Yeah. And like, you're very well organized and disciplined in that regard. And you're probably in the low percentile that are able to be that disciplined. And that's where we are looking at, how can we kind of support people on their busiest days to optimize their time?
But if I was able to throw that in my bag going, all right, there's a sachet, at least I'm bringing that with me.
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, I'm not going to get stuck. You know, it's the getting stuck of like, oh, I'll just have a sandwich, or I'll just have a bar, or just have whatever. That's the issue that just kind of like gets you caught, isn't it? Like,
look, nobody's perfect. We all slip up, and that's life. But if you're able to have a lifestyle supplement that's able to support you, great. And then if you're able to be prepared, like in an ideal world, we would all be having a vegetable patch outside our garden where we grow all our own veg and everything like that. But unfortunately, life isn't necessarily that easy. We are all living very hectic, busy lives. And this is part of the reason why I personally set up Hulsup with Dr. Brian, was to try to solve this problem. And it's, the stats are showing the marketplace is growing globally at a rapid rate, because people are time poor. And the first thing that goes is their health.
Mm.
Which is
another very popular podcast often does a read at exactly this time for a product very similar to this. So like, it shows you, like, it is in the public consciousness now. Like, we talked earlier about kind of like the minority of, like, you know, that, you know, they're extreme about their health, but like mainstream kind of mass people that exercise are now being more strategic about how they fuel themselves. Like, people are getting more knowledge. It is slightly overwhelming, but they're getting more knowledge about things like this, going, well, at least I factor that in, like with a whole food, you know, a good breakfast, and then I have dinner, and then I have a shake, I have a whole sub during the day. You know, it's 80-20, right?
Yeah.
You just, the consistency over the day. Talk to me about like the 0-1, because that's the bit I always love, is that you're sitting there and you're like, right, I'm going to figure out this product. I'm going to email this guy. Talk to me about that, because that's the bit I love for you.
Yeah.
Like, just that, I don't have a Scooby what I'm going to do, but I know I'm going to do something.
Yeah, so I have always really wanted to do something myself.
Okay.
And even though I started my kind of corporate career late from being an athlete, because I'm all in on what I do, so really went hard after the corporate lifestyle and kind of progressed really quickly, got up to directorship. So I was in a position where I kind of had a little bit of a safety net that I was able to start thinking about how would I formulate a business, really like this space. But then it's just about research.
Were you actively on the hunt for an idea?
No, this was a personal need that I needed, that I knew I wanted to solve. But subconsciously, I was looking for something that I wanted to do. And this is kind of fell into when I started kind of surveying the marketplace of like, what were the options for me personally at the time? And I wasn't overly happy with them.
Mm.
That's when I was like, okay, this is a serious opportunity. Why aren't I kind of scratching the surface here? Because all the indicators are that, for example, you mentioned one of our competitors, for the last 4 years, the highest search term in the category is alternative to that product. So that was part of when I'm doing the due diligence. I was like, okay, there is definitely a growing appetite. The market isn't saturated. So how do we go about this? I knew I didn't have the skill set to do this alone. And I didn't want to be a solo founder. I wanted to have to go on the journey together with somebody. I reached out to Dr. Brian.
Did you know him previously, or is this someone
you
just...
Yeah, he was a friend of a friend.
Okay. Because that's the other question people have, is like, oh, where do I find a founder?
Yeah, I know other people who just reach out to people with the right skill set and just don't... Like when you're a founder, one thing you do learn to have is very thick skin and get used to no's, because that's just the nature of the beast. But when I spoke to Brian, and I'll be honest, I spoke to other industry experts in the space to try look for the correct support, it was just a winner straight away. He just got the whole space and he got really, really excited about it. Like his enthusiasm can be kind of infectious, which is quite fun. Yeah. You do need it, because like the journey isn't linear and there's loads of ups and downs. Like I use it kind of the analogy of a swan. It looks beautiful on the outside, but you're paddling like mad underneath. But that's kind of, that's what you sign up to for when you're a startup founder. But once we got Brian involved, it was then the hard bit of actually trying to make a product.
Mm. So you wanted someone with kind of heavy expertise in the industry who could actually come and formulate this.
Yeah, he's a doctor in performance nutrition. He's also a senior lecturer in UL, and he also does a lot of keynote speaking in the industry.
Right.
So like,
as good as it gets, really, yeah.
For me personally, I couldn't pick anybody better. And I'm really fortunate to have somebody of his skill set involved in our team. I'm an ideas person. Like, so when we're looking at new product development, I'll be pinging him this, pinging him that. And he's able to just cut through all the fluff. He's just like, that's bad. There's no science behind that. That's just laced with the wrong type of product. That's not going to make the human body perform the right way. So having that soundboard is invaluable. But then when we kind of started going from ideation to product, it was really interesting. That small thing called COVID came.
When did you start?
So we started new product development probably about 3.5 years ago, and then launched 18 months ago.
Okay, so you were starting 2019, 2020?
Yeah. So we were kind of new product development for like two years.
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So like if you're not all in on something, that would make you walk away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this is probably a recommendation for new founders. I double job for quite a while. So I was getting up extremely early and then working extremely late and then all consuming lifestyle around it.
But that bought you the time to do it right.
Exactly.
There's all this conflicting advice out there. Like, there's no right way to do it. The right way to do it is the way that works for you.
Exactly. And I think with a product-based business, a physical product-based business, you can kind of do what we did, because it takes time to get that product to a level where you feel that the consumer will enjoy it.
Well, if you want to build the best, it does.
Yeah.
People bang out products all the time. You're kind of going, oh, that's awful.
Yeah. And we didn't want a white label. We didn't want to take anybody else's formulation. We wanted to have complete control over what's in our ingredients. And we couldn't find manufacturers who are willing to do that in this space.
Wow.
Which is really difficult. We came up against a lot of hurdles in regards to the new product development phase. So we did quite a few iterations, which are good, bad, and indifferent. Mm. Some nice stories, some bad stories about that, like blind tasting with family and friends. I'll just tell the story. It's quite funny. We're doing very first round iteration, super pumped to get the product out there, like completely wet behind the ears. Like just wanted to get some honest feedback from my nearest and dearest loved ones. So just went, Brian's family, my family, give us your honest feedback. Ooh. Here at the blind scoring. My mum gave it 0 out of 10. I was like, for fuck's sake, mum. Like,
oh, a zero?
Yeah, she just didn't palate it.
You get a couple of points just for turning up.
That's what
come
I
on,
thought.
Come on, Mum.
That's how I said.
Putting
said,
your name at the top of the paper gets you a couple of points.
I said, who did that? The little emoji hand comes up. So thankfully.
What was her feedback?
Oh, she just didn't like it. Didn't too gritty. Didn't like it. All this sort of stuff. And look, the easy feedback is somebody to rub your belly. We wanted, we said people to give as honest feedback as possible. I think we did 19 or 20 iterations from that day. So it took us a long, long time to get to market. And then,
so you'd come up with a formulation, send it off to get made.
Yeah.
You get sent back to you.
Yeah.
Taste. So tweak this, tweak that.
So loads of different things that I didn't even think about came into play. Smell, palatability, texture, smoothness, satiation, energy levels. There's a lot to it.
And some of that is quite personal.
Exactly. And that was the other thing. But things that aren't personal is palate feel.
Mm.
Taste is subjective, but you know if something is smooth, if you can feel that mouthfeel that feels like it's smooth. It's
I had that recently, actually. Kind of delicious. It was a new product, and I was dying to try it. I got it, grabbed it off the shelf, came home. I was like, oh, Michelle, look, we got this. And I met it, and I was like, oh. It was all like that kind of not grimy, but kind of like not gritty, but it just felt off.
Yeah, and it's super difficult, and I can relate to a lot of people in this space trying to do it because our product is a very natural product. We're using whole substance for a whole food supplement. Mm. And by doing that, it makes it more challenging.
I'm sure it does, yeah.
The easy option would be to put in like sugar in there, but we don't add any sugar.
That drives me mad. That's my pet hate when you get like a healthy product and you get it down. Porridge especially. So if I'm in the run, porridge is my go-to for like I'll grab it off the shelf and look around and go, okay, like, oh, it's 95. And then you're like, sugar. You're like, why put sugar in there? Because it'll taste yummy to the majority of people and they'll eat more. But like, exactly. It just drives me mad, especially sugar. Like, whatever about a sweetener, like honey. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Sugar.
Yeah, there's just a growing movement away from it. It's the consumers, we said earlier.
It doesn't make any sense when there's healthier options. Right?
Yeah, and there's way, way better options that you can use and way smaller dosages that will do the exact same thing. It was really challenging. Our product's also plant-based. So that also has its own challenges because we use two different plant-based protein, pea and brown rice, and then trying to keep it allergen-free. So like, there's a whole host.
Now I understand why it took 2 years.
At the
start, I was like, well, what were they doing?
I get it. So like, it's like when you use, like, that's why we needed food scientists. We needed Brian. We needed to really look at the ingredients we are sourcing and how they were kind of manufactured and how we manufacture it. So, it was a really challenging time. And then also not being able to get into the facility. And
So you were doing all this during COVID?
All during COVID, yeah. And like the idea originally was that we'd go down to the facility, we'd have a day, we'd be able to iterate there and then. But every iteration was send a batch or send two batches. Mm. And
there's a lot of stuff that happens in the room. There's a lot of like non-verbal communication. There's a lot of kind of like speed that gets lost when you're like, oh, package it off, send it off. And you're like,
there's days and there's weeks. There's all sorts. And then people's time to do all this.
Do you ever get frustrated?
Oh, massively. I want everything done yesterday. That's my behavior. That's one of my bad traits. I won't say my behavior.
Because 2 years to me would feel like 20.
Oh, it did. And like, there's a load of grey hairs coming up. I cut my hair really tight for a reason.
Same. People are like, oh, you got a new haircut. I'm like, yeah, because the grey's kept coming on the sides. So I just shaved it down.
It was unbelievably frustrating and testing. But at the time, we were trying to build the brand piece. So what you see in front of you was not our original packaging. We've already rebranded just to be more descriptive and everything like that.
It should never be. I think I hate when people wait ages to make it perfect. You can change it. Like, I'm about to rebrand the podcast now. Same name, but just touch up the branding because it's 5 years old now.
Yeah.
It just needs a fresh, needs a tweak. But it's got me to here.
Exactly. So like we were saying at the moment within the team, what got us here isn't going to get us there. And I'm a big believer in that. So like done doesn't need to be perfect because you can learn a lot from it. And like we've learned loads. Like it's been a roller coaster from the good, the bad, the ugly to the amazing.
Yeah.
And like that cycle happens all the time. It's like learn, fail, move on, implement.
And momentum at all costs is imperative for startups, yeah. Because you have to get moving, and people wait and wait and wait until the moment is right and the packaging is right and the product is right. You'd be waiting forever.
Yeah. And that's like looking back on some of like my mistakes. So I kind of do a lot of review kind of process, kind of, even though we do a lot of planning, but like, I remember we were doing like it's not even on the packaging anymore, but there's a circular stamp, just kind of saying some call outs. I spent like 10 days looking at this and the wording and how we change it, like trying to micro this. It's just like, Darren, what am I doing here? Yeah. Like,
you get lost in the weeds. Yeah.
Yeah. And this happens all the time. And it's not unusual because you're so close to it. Yeah. And like at the time, it was just me and Brian. So you're very much so. He's looking after the product. I'm looking after the brand, trying to harness that. So you don't have anybody to brainstorm off almost. So
really quick break to thank today's sponsor. If you've been inspired by listening to The Amazing Business Person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the local enterprise office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get the idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out your local enterprise office on localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business today. Now, back to the episode.
You can't leverage experts as well. You're kind of going, like a designer probably look at that in an hour.
Exactly.
I was trying to do something the other day in Canva and I was at it for like 90 minutes. I sent it to a friend of mine who's an excellent designer, excellent on Canva. She sent it back like 20 minutes later and it was 100% better. And yeah. I'm just kind of going, there's just skills.
Yeah.
That when you can access them after the point. But if I'd got it done on Canva, it would have been fine. Because like we talked about earlier about like how quickly people watch social now.
Yeah. It's scroll stopping. It's like you're
bum, 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 bum. It's only a post. Most people won't even see it. Move on. I'm not saying release poor stuff, but like, you know, can't spend a day on a social post.
Oh, like the hindsight is 2020 and like some of the stuff we put out at the start was so bad design wise, look, feel. It's just because it's not my skill set. Like I know what I like, but
you put stuff out though. That's the difference.
Yeah,
move forward. You again, put stuff out.
Done is better than perfection. You know, like get it out there instead of waiting for perfection because everything's going to evolve. So like, well, where we are now has been a big evolution, but like where we're going is going to be an even bigger. There's like going to be monumental changes.
And that's I remember okay. You came on my radar about a year ago, probably now, but even in the last 6 months, to see the difference is huge.
Hmm.
And I can see that as an external bystander, not as someone involved. So I can actually see. So if that's, you know, you can see the progression. Talk to me about like the last iteration and just getting ready to go to market. Talk to me about that phase because that's the bit that's really interesting of like, how did you kind of like just that final hurdle?
Yeah. So eventually we signed off on the product and then we were looking. Eventually we signed off on the product. Then we were looking at our website and trying to get that right. And we thought we had a perfect design. We use Shopify, like most e-commerce brand, highly recommend them. They're great, great scale with as well. Then we turned up. So eventually turned on our account, expecting to hear the cha-ching.
Da-ding.
Ding. Yeah. It didn't come. It really didn't come, actually. It was kind of like real nervous. Then you hear the old ding. Like, yes, who's that? You know, the person's like, okay.
It's not your mom anyway.
Yeah.
It usually is the mom. It's definitely not your mom.
Yeah. So thankfully, we had a couple of dings, all friends and family. But then it was like, then we started trying to do performance marketing, butchered that really badly, didn't get it right. Started doing Google Ads, didn't work very well. And like you start this way you're really testing your mettle because you're going like, oh God, what have we got ourselves in for?
Because even the best products, you need to drive people to them now. That's the key.
That is the key. And like currently at this stage, I was bootstrapping the business. So like it was quite nerve-wracking, really scary. And then it was like an order here, an order there. I remember the first order from somebody who I thought wasn't in my circle came from Scotland. And I was like, yes.
We're international.
Yeah. I was like, yes. And then my partner's Scottish. She goes, oh, yeah, I know her. She's down the road. I was like, deflated. And but finally, we started cracking the narrative. We changed our website from a big glitzy website to driving traffic to one landing page, condensed the whole messaging,
okay,
and changed the way we spoke So we started trying to find out what product language fit is. Forget about product market fit. So looking
product
at the
language fit.
Yeah, started looking at the language that we were using, how we were communicating the product, and how we're sharing the benefits of the product without being too feature led. So like how it's going to make you feel instead of saying all the ingredients and how great it is, because nobody wants to have that feeling that somebody's just talking to them about something. It's boring and there's no real motive.
And you don't care. Like you just want to know what's it going to do for me though.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so, but I think every company makes that mistake. Like, cause you've spent so long making it and you've spent
so long making it.
You're like, but it's got cherries in it, lads.
You like, should know about the cherries.
People are like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Where can I get it? What's it going to do for me? How much is it going to cost? Sweet.
Yeah. And that was it. It was too much language, too much text, everything like that. So condense everything then and really focus on outcome-based.
And where did that start to work then? Was it social? Was it Google? Was it press? Where was it?
It was a mix of social. It started social. So what we also needed to do was kind of understand our social proof. So getting people to actually use the product. Which was really helpful. And then started to build out the team. So one of the people, I started getting coaching of a kind of growth expert. So looking at how I could improve myself and implement those learnings into the business. So from a Meta point of view, from a Google point of view. So learning that, trying to understand that skill set, even though I thought I had a lot of knowledge, but it was more so program knowledge then implementation knowledge from my background,
right,
which is good learning. And then eventually that person came in 3 days a week into the business, so being instrumental now full time. So we started looking at bringing in really strong skill sets, but that's also challenging when you're bootstrapping. And that's when we kind of looked at the Enterprise Ireland supports that can be given out then.
And what did you do? Did you raise funds then at that stage?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, so we were probably 9 months into trading at that stage, and then started speaking to EI about how they can help. And like anybody who's looking to start a business should be speaking with them. They are a resource pool that is phenomenal. I know you've had a lot of guests on here from Sinead and Sharon and co. Brilliant entrepreneurs.
I think amazingly, people still aren't aware, like the likes of the local enterprise office who are sponsors and like leading into EI, there's an incredible ecosystem there that once you get into it, there's an incredible path to bring you through to go, okay, you need support on this, you need help on that, you need international experts, you need digital marketing experts, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's not just about grants and stuff, it's about access to people.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. What you don't know at the start, you really don't know. And you're with the biggest intentions of like trying to leverage your own network and your understanding, they can just make a phone call and an introduction and they're willing to do that. So we went to Futures at the start up in the GEC. We were really, really helpful. And then we got into the HPSU, the kind of high potential startup kind of division. And like our DAs are phenomenal, from Dervla, Niall and Jack. They've been so invested in the business, which is a massive credit to them and a massive help to us. And it definitely helped us kind of move away from the pitfalls we made in the past, which is trying to maybe take on too much. I think it's a chicken and egg situation though.
When
you're bootstrapped and you don't necessarily have capital to bring in people, it's like, how do you scale?
So you have to get to a certain point and you have to have ambition. But then too much ambition can choke you. I said this on a different pod recently, is that you put jet fuel into a car, it just explodes. So it's all about trying to like incremental steps at that stage. Once you've launched, it's all about kind of like, okay, you need ambition, but you need to just drive the car a little bit faster. And then you need to like upgrade the car, and then you need to bring in the people to drive the car for you. You can't be driving it yourself all the time.
There's an inflection point though
And
like, it's just about knowing that as well and being confident that you're seeing the traction. So the biggest kind of confidence booster we got to our first 1,000 customers like within that bootstrapped phase, which was...
That's huge.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing. And then we had a double the industry average return customer base even then, even though we weren't... Our email marketing was lax, put it that way. I was trying to do that. It wasn't set up correctly. We didn't have the flow set up in Klaviyo and all that good stuff that a maturing business should have.
But again, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
But you were starting. I think that's the lesson from today, is just... You don't have to know everything, but you got to start.
Exactly. Like taking a step forward is the right step, and you're going to take loads of steps forward. It might be one step forward, two steps back, but you've learned, you're going to learn in between all of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was when we started kind of looking at how would we get external funding? How would we go about really driving this into a proper business?
How'd you do that?
EI were a great help. And then we started looking at strategic angel investors, people with industry experience, people that may be a good profile as well. And we approached them. It takes a long time because at our stage, we weren't a safe bet then. But that's what angel investors are so critical to the startup ecosystem. We're blessed with them because they're so invested in the business in regards to how we're performing, but also advice. They've been a great sounding board of being able to pick up the phone and go, what do you think? This is where we're at.
Right. So it wasn't just money. It was way more than that.
Yeah, way more than that. Because, look, money is really important and it's critical to fuel the business. But getting advice from people who've been there, scaled other food businesses, like to a real level, is invaluable.
Mm. So how long did that whole process take? You said it takes longer than you think. How long did it take?
So we planned to do it in 3 months, and I think...
That was ambitious.
I like to try to do things quickly. I think it took us 9 or 10 months.
Yeah, even that's fast.
Yeah, particularly at a business at our stage now, I realise it is. But yeah, loads of learnings from that as well, trying to tighten up things, how we do.
How much did you raise at the time?
And we've raised over 600,000 now.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's, thankfully where we're at, we're beginning to, we know what we're doing. I know that might sound a little bit crazy, but like we know how the team is performing, how we're getting a return on investment and ad spend. We're now entering into retail, which is trying to get an omni-channel approach. We see the areas of development in our new product development side, which is going to be like a very much so mainstream product, which we're really excited to launch hopefully in August this year.
Amazing.
So a lot has changed, but also the team has changed. Like we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing now without the team that we have, and they've been instrumental. Without any shadow of a doubt, we wouldn't be able to get here. So like we brought in an operations director, Therese, who grew up startup in the US from 0 to 25 million. Uh-huh. Came back and ended up being a managing director for a very mature business here in Ireland. Knowledge that I just wouldn't have myself. And I think, and then our head of growth was with a brain care supplement, grew them from 25K a month to 325K a month current revenue. So we're bringing in what I consider A players, but they're so invested in our business. They're like, I think at our stage, everybody's so focused on product and outcome. We're still a really lean team, but we're maximizing everybody's output, which is such a great place to be.
It's really interesting what you said there. You brought on people who've done this to there and that to there. That's so fundamental because sometimes people get hired and they're like, oh, we hired them because they've worked there.
Yeah.
But what you said there is really important. I just want to call that out. Like you hire people who've brought this product from that per month to this per month.
Mm.
And that's what it's all about as a startup is what moves the needle.
Incremental improvements and people who have seen pitfalls in the past.
Yeah.
And look, nobody is perfect. I myself have made a really bad hire at the start. I went on Logos, who they worked for before, some of the biggest brands in the world, and I was rubbing my hands going, this is a coup. Yep. But when they came in, they didn't have all the procedures in place, didn't have the tech stack that they probably were expecting from their past life, and they just weren't a cultural fit. The people who we have working for us now are culturally perfect. They want the business to succeed. They're like so committed, but then they also have their skill set. And me, as some of the learnings that I've taken, is the more I step back and give autonomy to the team, the better we perform. So, and it also gives me more space to look at strategic activities. So
that's like, hard to learn as well, though. It's hard to learn because you've built this from your baby. You've built this literally from the ground up. It's hard to actually learn to step back.
Yeah, it's super difficult, but that's what a good leader does. And like, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but it's certainly something that I'm trying to work on is give enough reins to the team that they can have a real ownership of the work that they're doing. And they're doing a superb job. Like, I think I said it earlier on, but like, we test, we learn, we fail, we move on, we double down on what's working. And like, we work in sprints, so a week sprint or 2 week sprint. So these are sprints.
They're literally, usually people go, 5 to 8 weeks is our sprint, or even 12 maybe. Yeah. Like, they are mad sprints.
Yeah, they are.
And they're flat to the mad 100 meters, go. Yeah,
go. And then we find out what works very quickly and we find out how we fail. And like, that's fine. Once we learn from
what are you testing in that week? Like, what are you sprinting on?
We would test anything from email campaigns to performance marketing to hooks to clicks to website optimization, everything from there. So everybody has assigned. We use Notion. It's brilliant. I know you like it.
Love it.
Everybody's assigned tasks, challenges, and like, not everything gets done in a sprint, but there's blockers and we talk about it. Mm. And then we kick off the week by the sprint meeting, and then we implement what we're aiming to do from what we're hoping to achieve.
What have you brought from your pro athlete life to being a founder?
It's a great question. Loads. I think people underestimate how transferable all the skills are. Like, I didn't even realize it at the start. I started to understand it and get harnessed that from when I was working digital transformation, how to lead people and motivate people. Because people have different expectations of what a job is. So like, some people are happy to clock in at 9 and clock out at 5, get a nice salary, earn their commission on sales, do all that sort of stuff. Other people are driven by promotions. They want to get a title beside their name. So once I started realizing this, it's quite easy to see how to motivate and transfer some of the skills. So in a team environment, you have everybody focus on outcome based. Majority of people are self-motivated, they're driven, they have baseline standards. So when in our world now, in the wholesale world, we drive baseline standards, we look for people who are motivated, we look for team players. And all of these skills are natural in the athletic world, in the kind of professional world. But once you set those kind of that benchmark internally in the team, everybody adopts it. Mm. And it's great. And you just got to encourage people. Like, it's that motivation. It's like giving people the reins, as I just said, to run their department in the business. And I get excited about it. They take ownership. They want to be doing it, but they also have the skills and the resources to do that. So I think there's unbelievable transferable skills. And honestly, it was only when I started working in digital transformation, I realized how transferable they were. And then now having more autonomy to implement some of that in our own team, it's been massive.
It's really interesting because sometimes I've founders come in here and it's I and it happened recently. I was like, wow, that's quite jarring. But throughout your whole chat with me, it's always been the team and we. And like, it's really interesting to watch. That's why I asked you that question. It's like, I wonder, is that coming directly from being an athlete? You are only the sum of your parts.
Yeah, you're only as good as, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and all the kind of those analogies. But we wouldn't be where we are now if I didn't have the team around us, or if we didn't have the team. Like, it's the making and breaking of the business is how we build the team, because we know we got a great product. We know that people want to come back. We know our repeat customers are there. The data shows us this. Everything else is going to come down to our performance and how we drive creatives, how we bring out new products.
So where does this go then? Where could Wholesup go?
Hopefully we'll be the global market leader. And like, I say that openly because that's the ambition. Like, it's not just about to be known in Ireland and the UK. We shipped to 22 countries around the world. We shipped over 225,000 meals now at this stage.
225, wow, good stuff. Congrats, man.
Thanks. And that's through hard work, grit and determination. We're opening a fulfillment centre in Rotterdam in the next 6 weeks, all going well. That I will open up 2 to 3 day shipping for most of Europe, and then the North Star is going to North America. So we have massive ambitions for Hulsup. So will it be linear? Definitely not. Will we get there? Definitely.
I love when Irish founders have big ambition, because it's not something we do here really very well. Yeah. We kind of, sure, look, it's going grand. And you're like, didn't you raise like 20 million last week? Look, it's going all right. Like, you need that though. I think we need to be a bit more ambitious, and we need to build more things here to really take on, because, you know, FDI is great, but we do need to start building big businesses here in Ireland, I think. We need to start supporting founders. Like, I was reading last week about, like, they want to build another accelerator. I'm like, stop building accelerators and like creche for founders. Support existing founders who've started like you and go, how do I make this better? How do I make this easier? How do I make it more? Show me your incentives, I'll show you your outcome. I think about that sentence every single day of my life. You have to incentivize founders who are already out there grafting.
Yeah, I agree with everything you say. And like, sometimes saying your goals in public holds you accountable as well.
And I do it all the time, and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is.
And every month, actually, I'm due to do it today. Actually, it'll be tomorrow because we're recording so much. Every month, I share the figures.
Yeah.
It's bloody hard.
Yeah,
you're kind of going, oh. You're like, sharing every single social thing you've done, every audio download, every video download, especially when they're not big, but at least they're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I hold myself accountable, because when you're your own boss, you know this, you can kind of, not coast, but sometimes you can kind of go, look, next month will be better. So you need those. I love what you say there, baseline standards.
Yeah.
I'm going to rob that. You'll hear me say that a lot now.
Good, yeah.
I'm glad I got it. I've had this idea about baseline standards.
but it's true. Like, it's, we share like on a weekly basis all the data of the business, how it's going, where it's going, if it's up or down. So everybody knows within our business, that's just the way it is. And coming on podcasts like this, being open, being vulnerable to failure, like, Hulsup won't define me as a person. And I strongly believe that, but it will help me achieve the goals that we want as a business, which is, they're lofty and we are aggressive. And that's, it's okay to be aggressive about your goals, because we're all self-driven. We want to get to where we want to go. And I keep saying it, what got us here is not going to get us to the next point. So we're dramatically trying to change things. And you pointed out some of those changes.
Grand is not a metric.
No,
you can't just, grand. It's a very Irish metric, but it's not a metric you can build a business on. Not a KPI you can build a business on.
Definitely not. Not when you're a digitally native business.
So what does the next kind of like 6 to 18 months look like for Hulsup?
Hopefully it's going to be continue the trajectory we're on. We're riding a very aggressive growth phase at the moment, which is amazing to be a part of. We are looking at the team itself and reviewing how we continue to grow that. Grow into new markets is a big one. Continue to double our size in the UK is another ambition, because if we look at the population in Ireland, there's 5 million people. In Manchester, there's 5 million people, 65 million people across it. So it's a good base.
I go to Manchester a lot. That exact thought every single time. You fly out of Dublin, you know, at 6 a.m., you arrive, you're having breakfast in Manchester, and you're like, this is mad. There's more people here than in the entire island.
It blows,
city as well.
Yeah, it is a great city. Can blow your mind, the amount of people. So we want to continue to grow in Ireland. We want to double our size in the UK. And then we open up the fulfillment centre in Rotterdam and see the growth across Europe. And then we have a very exciting new product coming out, which will be mainstream. And we think that's going to be another game changer. Mm. We've spent a long time on this. And we're very...
2 years? Higher, lower? I feel like I've got Demi McGee. Higher, lower?
We've been talking about it for about 3, and definitely a new product development for almost 2. So.
But they're the gems, right? And thanks for sharing that, because they're the gems that I love people listening to take away. I love tangibles. I love when people are listening going, okay, I've been at this for 12 months. I thought I was stupid. Or I've been at this for 15 months and I can't get it right. But now I know it takes time, especially for like aspiring founders. I love when they kind of hear from someone like you and going, ain't easy, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Keep going.
And like that's kind of about surrounding yourself with the right people. Like, the Irish startup community is phenomenal. Like, there's some amazing businesses out there. But there's also a generation of people, like we spoke about earlier, that are happy to help.
Yeah. I do feel there's a new breed. I do believe that, because I've talked to a lot of people over the last 5 years. And I do believe there's a big collaboration effort. People are open. People are honest. People want to help.
Yeah.
It's not this kind of like, for you to win, I have to lose.
No.
That's the old style mentality. And I think thankfully the new breed don't have that. And the new breed are a bit more kind of like tuned in to like, that's why I talk about body, business, brain all the time. Because without the three in harmony, there's nothing.
No. Like we went on one of EI's courses, Defenders Forum. And like we had a group of, I think it was 7 or 8 of us in there. Brilliant group, phenomenal people, and unbelievably open, collaborative, sharing war stories, sharing the pitfalls. And the funny thing is, in multifaceted businesses, yeah, the problems are nearly identical.
It transfers across. I always say that. It transfers across. We all think we're very special little flowers and, oh, it's just unique to Wholesome. Oh, no one's ever had this business before. No one's ever had this problem before. And then they're like someone in random business in tech or something, agriculture. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, no, we've been struggling with that for like 6 months. Here's what you do.
Yeah.
And it's unreal.
And that's it. And I think like maybe a message for other kind of early stage vendors is just ask for help.
And be vulnerable, I think, is a big one. Be willing to say, I don't know.
Yeah. And that's okay. Because you don't know what you don't know, but you can learn very quickly. Mm. Like me personally, I've learned a ton in this journey, and like I'm going to continue to, and like that's the beauty of it. You got to be open and willing to learn and not be stubborn.
The best founders I meet are curious and vulnerable.
Yeah,
they'll ask you 10 questions for every one you ask them, and you're like, geez, why are they asking me all these questions? But like it's just they're so curious about everything.
Yeah.
They're curious about, why do you record in a cinema? How does this video work? Where does this go? How do you promote it? Because they're just looking for learnings all the time. They've unlocked that piece of their brain where they're like, it's all this infinite game.
Yeah,
I'm not playing to an end point. That's the big thing. I'm not playing to this end of like, I just want to sell the business and get out. We talk off camera about that, like how that mindset just skews you, ruins you. Whereas if you had the infinite game mindset of like, I'm going to build this as long as I want.
And like by building a business to where it can go, you're going to give your investors and everybody else the return that they're looking for, because you give them the option to buy out. You can go clean up your cap table if that was what you wanted to do. You can sell it if that's something that you want to do. Or you keep growing it and give the dividend returns. There's so
long-term
much
opportunity. Thinking.
Like if I understand people are building businesses to sell them, great, good. But at an early stage, you need to have that drive and that physical focus that you're going to continue to grow it. And yes, you may need to take on investment, fine, but you're going to grow it and you're going to really, really grow after it. And that's what we're trying to do.
Well, you said something brilliant earlier. It's not linear. You can't go, oh, I'm going to set this up. This is going to happen. And this, there's no like playbook. There's principles, but there's no playbook.
There's only one thing that's certain that's going to go wrong at times.
Yeah.
And like just from all sorts of stuff, like that just happens.
Yeah.
And just got to get used to it.
It's not linear. I love that. Let's do our quick fire round.
Okay.
What book would you recommend every entrepreneur should read?
Good question. I actually had 3 in my mind, but the one that I'd recommend is 10X, not 2X. It's very good because it's kind of the 80-20 rule.
Mm, big fan. I'm
trying to focus on the 20% that's actually going to move the dial properly, and the 80% can be fluff. And I'm guilty of that, so that's a big one. And then the other two that I like, I'm just going to give, it's Shoe Dog. I know that's a very common one.
I have to get a bell.
Yeah.
I have to get a bell to ring every time someone says Shoe Dog.
But I think that's just a good resilience story.
It is great.
And then
if you're listening to the pod, you haven't read Shoe Dog at this stage, what are you doing?
Yeah. And then the third one is Legacy, which is a good one. It's just about behaviors and culture. And I think that's one that is really important in business. So almost the three of them kind of go different stages in your business journey. Sorry, this isn't very quick fire.
No, it's fine. Look, I'm a book nerd.
Yeah.
The more books you give me, the happier I'll be. Yeah. Legacy is a great one. And it's funny, as you were chatting, I was like, oh, there's a lot of overlap here in what you were saying in terms of like just that mindset of like, of excellence and standards and things like that. It's a really good book. What's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself since starting the business?
Probably self-resilience. There's been like a lot of challenging times, like really, really challenging times. Personally, like I lost my mum about a year and a half ago.
Which sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thanks. Unbelievably challenging because we were fundraising, but the world doesn't stop.
It's tough though.
It's really tough. But that resilience, to understand that the buses are going to come down the road, everything's going to keep going. It was almost like a way of processing how things go. Mm. But that was really tough. But also knowing that you can keep going. And that's like life keeps moving on. And that was one of the things that I learned a lot about myself in the last while.
Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate the openness. What valuable business is Known building?
I think there's a lot that can be done to disrupt the digital health space. I think there's so much optimization for the NHS, for the HSE, about preventative care. I don't think that it's only just scratching the surface. I think we are way too reactive on our healthcare at the moment. So, like, I know we've mentioned previously about doing bloods twice a year. It's a simple thing. Everybody should be doing it. You can see, prevent things coming. If that's, I think that there's a real opportunity there. But yeah.
100%. I agree with that 1,000%. If I was getting involved in business today, it'd be preventive health. What would you do today if I gave you 10 million euro?
Invested in Hulsup. No. Probably actually look at investing in the digital health space. I think I really do feel there's a lot that can be done there. Even just from systems talking to each other. Most of them don't even talk to each other. Even looking at like...
Everything's siloed. All the health information. Yeah, like, your doctor health is siloed. Everything's siloed.
Yeah, like, there's a bunch of stuff that could work there.
Yeah, love it. What's something important in your daily routine you wish you started sooner?
Getting up early. Going to bed early, getting up early. Surrounding myself with the right people. But both of them go hand in hand. I think because they create a correct habit. It's really good for me. It clears my head. Just being able to do that. And then also love an ice bath. I know I can treat it. But
it's okay. I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You can only invest in one person or company. Who is it?
Shopify.
I think on the long term.
On the long term.
I believe in that as well.
Yeah, it's a platform designed again, stronger. The functionality that it's doing at the moment, the data that it's able to spit out, the plugins that it's able to, the applications that they're acquiring at the moment, acquiring businesses that actually play well with them. It's a really interesting space. And I think the entrepreneur that's in everybody will start with a Shopify account just because it's such a little cost to starting it up.
Yeah, I was looking at their stock price recently.
That's impressive.
I think long term, it's a great one. If you start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
It's hard to even think like that at the moment.
You're right in the middle. You're in the messy middle.
I'm in the messy middle. Yeah, it'd be something around digital health.
Okay. What do you believe that other people will find strange or strongly disagree with?
The Irish education system lets people down. I think it should be more practical based instead of a memory test at the end of 3 years. I think it's continuous practical knowledge would be better. Simple thing. I think a lot of people don't know how to cook food. They should all be doing home ec. Simple. But like it's...
Life skills. I agree with you 1,000%. If I could change two things, it would be continuous assessment and life skills. Even communication.
Yeah.
Personal finance. Just how do you live?
Personal finance.
Just make it more practical towards life. And I just hate the regurgitation, because if you're someone who doesn't perform well under pressure, your 6 years comes down to a couple of hours. It makes no sense to me. Continuous assessment all the way. What's one thing in your personal life that makes you, brings you immense happiness that you spend money on?
Food.
Give me specifics.
I love going to a nice restaurant.
Okay.
Really, really enjoy that. And then I also like R&D, so I buy a lot of products in multiple different spaces in the wellness sector. But I love treating myself to a really nice meal.
Nice.
I like it. Just, it's a nice
treat. Treat yourself on the journey. Can't all be the hard startup slog.
No, and they don't have to be necessarily expensive restaurants. They can be nice, fast, casual dining restaurants. Yeah.
Nice. A bit of time for yourself. What's your final piece of advice to every entrepreneur listening?
I think... if you're going to go after something, make sure you tactically look at the marketplace. So understand what you're trying to do, educate yourself on the space. And if it's a product-based business, get the product right and then go all in. And that was kind of how we've done it. And hopefully that's going to pay off for us.
I think the proof is in the pudding. When it sits here in front of my on my desk here, you can kind of see exactly what that means.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks.
That was phenomenal. Darren, thank you so much for coming in. Where can people learn more about you and Hulsup?
Yeah, hulsup.com. All our information's there. Follow us on our socials. Our handle is Hulsup as well. And then if anybody wants to reach out to me directly, LinkedIn or Instagram.
Brilliant.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.